facing her.
Katza, listen to me. You're the most powerful person I've ever met. You can do whatever you want in the world. No one can make you do anything, and your uncle can't touch you. The instant you walk into his presence, you have all the power. If you wish not to hurt him, Katza, then you have only to choose not to.
But what will I do?
You'll figure it out. You only have to go in knowing what you won't do. You won't hurt him. You won't let him hurt you. You'll figure the rest out as you go along.
She sighed into the table. She didn't think much of his plan.
It's the only possible plan, Katza. You have the power to do whatever you want.
She sat up and turned to him.
You keep saying that, but it's not true. I don't have the power to stop you from sensing my thoughts.
He raised his eyebrows.
You could kill me.
I couldn't, for you would know I meant to kill you, and you'd escape me. You'd stay far away from me always.
Ah, but I wouldn't.
You would, if I wished to kill you.
I wouldn't.
On that senseless note, she threw her arms into the air.
Enough! Enough of this!
She stood up from the table and marched out of her apartments to answer the king's call. Chapter 15. Her first thought when she entered the throne room was to wish she'd brought a knife after all. Her second thought was to wish that Poe's sense of bodies had extended to this room, so that he might have warned her of what was waiting for her here, and she might have known not to come. A long blue carpet led from the doors to Randa's throne. The throne was raised high on a platform of white marble. Randa sat high on his throne, blue robes and bright blue eyes, his face hard, his smile frozen. An archer to either side of him, an arrow notched in each bow and trained, as she entered the room, on her forehead, on the place just above her blue and green eyes. Two more archers, one in each far corner, also with arrows notched. The king's guard lined the carpet on either side, three men deep, swords drawn and held at their sides. Randa usually kept a tenth this many guards in his throne room. Impressive. It was an impressive battalion Randa had arranged in preparation for her appearance. But as Katza took stock of the room, it occurred to her that Byrne or Drowden or Thigpen would have done better. It was good he was an unwarring king, for Randa was not so clever when it came to assembling battalions. This one he'd assembled all wrong. Too few archers, and too many of these clumsy, armored, lumbering men who would trip all over each other if they tried to attack her. Tall, broad men who could shield her easily from an arrow's flight. And armed, all of them armed with swords, and each with a dagger in his opposite belt. Swords and daggers she might as well be carrying on her own person, so easily could she snatch them from their owners. And the king himself raised high on a platform, a long blue carpet leading straight to him, like a pathway to direct the flight of her blade. If a fight erupted in this room, it would be a massacre. Katza stepped forward, her eyes and ears finely tuned to the archers. Randa's archers were good, but they were not graced. Katza spared a moment to dryly pity the guards at her back, if this encounter came down to arrow dodging. And then, when she'd progressed about halfway to the throne, her uncle called out,
"Stop there! I've no wish for your closer company, Katza."
Her name sounded like steam hissing down the carpet when Randa spoke it.
"You return to court today with no woman. No dowry. My underlord and my captain injured by your hand. What do you have to say for yourself?"
When a battalion of soldiers didn't trouble her, why should one voice rile her so? She forced herself to hold his contemptuous eyes.
I didn't agree with your order, Lord King.
Can I possibly have heard you correctly? You didn't agree with my order?
No, Lord King.
Randa sat back, his smile twisted tighter now.
Charming. Charming, truly. Tell me, Katsa, what precisely possessed you with the notion that you are in a position to consider the king's orders? To think about them? To form opinions regarding them? Have I ever asked you to share your thoughts on anything?
No, Lord King.
Have I ever encouraged you to bestow upon us your sage advice?
No, Lord King.
Do you imagine it is your wit, your stunning intellect, that warrants your position in this court?
And here was where Randa was clever. This was how he'd kept her a caged animal for so long. He knew the words to make her feel stupid and brutish and turn her into a dog. Well, and if she must be a dog, at least she would no longer be in this man's cage. She would be her own. She would possess her own viciousness, and she would do what she liked with it. Even now, she felt her arms and legs beginning to thrill with readiness. She narrowed her eyes at the king. She could not keep the challenge out of her voice.
And what exactly is the purpose of all these men, Uncle?
Randa smiled blandly.
These men will attack if you make the slightest move. And at the end of this interview, they'll accompany you to my dungeons.
And do you imagine I'll go willingly to your dungeons?
I don't care if you go willingly or not.
That's because you think these men could force me to go against my will.
Katsa, of course, we all have the highest regard for your skill. But even you have no chance against 200 guards and my best archers. The end of this conversation will see you either in my dungeons or dead.
Katsa saw and heard everything in the room. The king and his archers, the arrows notched and aimed, the guards ready with their swords, her arms in red sleeves, her feet beneath red skirts. The room was still, completely still, excepting the breath of the men around her and the tingling she felt inside her. She held her hands at her sides, away from her body, so that everyone could see them. She breathed around a thing that she recognized now as hatred. She hated this king. Her body was alive with it.
Uncle, let me explain what will happen the instant one of your men makes a move toward me. Let's say, for instance, one of your archers lets an arrow fly. You've not come to many of my practices, Uncle. You haven't seen me dodge arrows. But your archers have. If one of your archers releases an arrow, I'll drop to the floor. The arrow will doubtless hit one of your guards. The sword and the dagger of that guard will be in my hands before anyone in the room has time to realize what's happened. A fight will break out with the guards, but only 7 or 8 of them can surround me at once, Uncle. And 7 or 8 are nothing to me. As I kill the guards, I'll take their daggers and begin throwing them into the hearts of your archers, who, of course, will have no sighting on me once the brawl with the guards has broken out. I'll get out of the room alive, Uncle. But most of the rest of you will be dead. Of course, this is only what will happen if I wait for one of your men to make a move. I could move first. I could attack a guard, steal his dagger, and hurl it into your chest this instant.
Randa's mouth was fixed into a sneer, but under this he had begun to tremble. A threat of death, given and received, and Katsa felt it ringing in her fingertips. And she saw that she could do it now. She could kill him right now. The disdain in his eyes would disappear, and his sneer would slide away. Her fingers itched, for she could do it now with the snatch of a dagger.
And then what?
A small voice inside herself whispered, and Katsa caught her breath, stricken. And then what? A bloodbath, one she'd be lucky to escape. Raffan would become king, and his first inheritance would be the task of killing the murderer of his father, a charge he couldn't avoid if he meant to rule justly as the king of the Midlands, and a charge that would break his heart and make her an enemy and a stranger. And Poe would hear of it as he was leaving. He'd hear that she'd lost control and killed her uncle, that she'd caused her own exile and broken Raffin's spirit. He would return to Leenid and watch from his balcony as the sun dropped behind the sea. And he'd shake his head in the orange light and wonder why she'd allowed this to happen when she held so much power in her hands.
Where is your faith in your power?
The voice whispered now.
You don't have to shed blood.
And Katsa saw what she was doing here in this throne room. She saw Randa, pale, gripping the arms of his throne so hard it seemed he might break them. In a moment, he would motion to his archers to strike out of fear, out of the terror of waiting for her to make the first move. Tears came to her eyes. Mercy was more frightening than murder because it was harder, and Randa didn't deserve it. And even though she wanted what the voice wanted, she didn't think she had the courage for it.
Poe thinks you have the courage,
the voice said fiercely.
Pretend that you believe he's right. Believe him for just a moment.
Pretend. Her fingers were screaming, but maybe she could pretend long enough to get out of this room. Katsa raised burning eyes to the king. Her voice shook.
I'm leaving the court. Don't try to stop me. I promise you'll regret it if you do. Forget about me once I'm gone, for I won't consent to live like a tracked animal. I'm no longer yours to command.
His eyes were wide and his mouth open. She turned and rushed down the long carpet, her ears tuned to the silence, readying her to spin around at the first hint of a bowstring or a sword. As she passed through her uncle's great doors, she felt the weight of hundreds of astonished eyes on her back, and none of them knew she had been only a breath, a twitch, away from changing her mind. Part 2. The Twisted King. Chapter 16. They left well before daylight. Raffan and Ban saw them off, the two medicine makers bleary-eyed, Ban yawning endlessly. The morning was cold, and Katsa was wide awake and quiet, for she was shy of her riding partner, and she felt strange about Raffan, so strange that she wished he wasn't there. If Raffan hadn't been there watching her go, then perhaps she'd have been able to pretend she wasn't leaving him. With Raffan there, there was no pretense, and she was unable to do anything about the strange, painful water that rose into her eyes and throat every time she looked at him. They were impossible, these two men, for if one did not make her cry, the other did. What Helda would make of it, she could only imagine. And she hadn't liked saying goodbye to Helda, either, or Al. No, there was little to be happy of this morning, except that she was not, at least, leaving Poe. And he was probably standing there beside his horse, registering her every feeling on the matter. She gave him a withering look for good measure, and he raised his eyebrows and smiled and yawned. Well, and he'd better not ride as if he were half asleep, or she'd leave him in the dust. She was not in the mood to dawdle. Raffin fussed back and forth between their horses, checking saddles, testing the holes of their stirrups.
I suppose I needn't worry about your safety, with the two of you riding together.
We'll be safe.
Katza yanked at a strap that held a bag to her saddle. She tossed a bag over her horse's back to Poe.
You have the list of council contacts in Sunder? And the maps? You have food for the day? You have money?
Katza smiled up at him then, for he sounded as she imagined a mother would sound if her child were leaving forever.
Poe's a prince of Leenid. Why do you think he rides such a big horse, if not to carry his bags of gold?
Raffin's eyes laughed down at her.
Take this.
He closed her hands over a small satchel.
It's a bag of medicines, in case you should need them. I've marked them so you'll know what each is for.
Poe came forward then and held his hand out to Ban.
Thank you for all you've done.
He took Raffin's hand.
You'll take care of my grandfather in my absence?
He'll be safe with us.
Poe swung onto the back of his horse, and Katza took Ban's hands and squeezed them. And then she stood before Raffin and looked up into his face.
Well, you'll let us know how you're faring when you're able?
Of course.
He looked at his feet and cleared his throat. He rubbed his neck and sighed. How she wished again that he weren't here, for the tears would spill onto her cheeks and she couldn't stop them.
Well, and I'll see you again someday, my love.
She reached up for him then and wrapped her arms around his neck, and he lifted her up off the ground and hugged her tight. She breathed into the collar of his shirt and held on. And then her feet were on the ground again. She turned away and climbed into her saddle.
We leave now,
she said to Poe. As their horses cantered out of the stable yard, she didn't look back. Their route was rough and changeable, for their only certain plan was to follow whatever path seemed likely to bring them closer to the truth of the kidnapping. Their first destination was an inn, south of Mergen City, 3 days' ride from Randa City, an inn sitting along the route which they supposed the kidnappers had taken. Mergen's spies frequented the inn, as did merchants and travelers from the port cities of Sunder, often even from Monsey. It was as good a place to start as any, Poe thought, and it didn't take them out of their way if their ultimate destination was Monsey. They didn't travel anonymously. Katza's eyes identified her to anyone in the Seven Kingdoms who had ears to hear the stories. Poe was conspicuously a Leenid, and enough the subject of idle talk to be recognized by virtue of his own eyes and by the graceling company he kept. The story of Katza's hasty departure from Randa's court with the Leenid prince would spread. Any attempt to disguise themselves would be foolish. Katza didn't even bother to change from the blue tunic and trousers that marked her as a member of Randa's family. Their purpose would be assumed, for it was well enough agreed that the graceling Leenid searched for his missing grandfather, and it would now be supposed that the graceling lady assisted him. Their inquiries, the route they chose, the very dinners they ate would be the stuff of gossip. But still, they would be safe in their deception, for no one would know that Katza and Poe searched not for the grandfather, but for the motive of his kidnapping. No one would know that Katza and Poe knew of Mergen's involvement and suspected Lek of Monsey. And no one could even guess how much Poe could learn by asking the most mundane questions. He rode well, and almost as fast as she would have liked. The trees of the southern forest flew past. The pounding of hooves comforted her and numbed her sense of the distance stretching between her and the people she'd left behind. She was glad of Poe's company. Their riding was companionable. But then, when they stopped to stretch their legs and eat something, she was shy of him again and didn't know how to be with him or what to say.
Sit with me, Katza.
He sat on the trunk of a great fallen tree, and she glared at him from around her horse.
Katza, dear Katza, I won't bite. I'm not sensing your thoughts right now, except to know that I make you uncomfortable. come and talk to me.
And so she came and sat beside him, but she didn't talk, and she didn't exactly look at him either, for she was afraid of becoming trapped in his eyes.
Katza,
he said finally, when they had sat and chewed in silence for a number of minutes.
You'll get used to me in time. We'll find the way to relate to each other. How can I help you with this? Should I tell you whenever I sense something with my grace, so you can come to understand it?
It didn't sound very appealing to her. She'd prefer to pretend that he sensed nothing. But he was right. They were together now, and the sooner she faced this, the better.
Yes.
Very well, then, I will. Do you have any questions for me? You have only to ask.
I think, if you always know what I feel about you, then you should always tell me what you're feeling about me, as you feel it. Always.
He glanced at her sideways.
I'm not wild about that idea.
Nor am I wild about you knowing my feelings, but I have no choice.
He rubbed his head.
I suppose, in theory, it'd be fair.
It would.
Very well. Let's see. I'm very sympathetic about your having left Raffin. I think you're brave to have defied Randa as you did with that Ellis fellow. I don't know if I could have gone through with it. I think you have more energy than anyone I've ever encountered, though I wonder if you aren't a bit hard on your horse. I find myself wondering why you haven't wanted to marry Gidden, and if it's because you've intended to marry Raffin, and if so, whether you're even more unhappy to have left him than I realized. I'm very pleased you've come with me. I'd like to see you defend yourself for real, fight someone to the death, for it would be a thrilling sight. I think my mother would take to you. My brothers, of course, would worship you. I think you're the most quarrelsome person I've ever met, and I really do worry about your horse.
He stopped then, broke a piece of bread, and chewed and swallowed. She stared at him, her eyes wide.
That's all for now.
You can't possibly have been thinking all those things in that moment,
she said. And then he laughed, and the sound was a comfort to her, and she fought against the gold and silver lights that shone in his eyes, and lost. When he spoke, his voice was soft.
And now I'm wondering how it is you don't realize your eyes ensnare me, just as mine do you. I can't explain it, Katza, but you shouldn't let it embarrass you, for we're both overtaken by the same foolishness.
A flush rose into her neck, and she was doubly embarrassed by his eyes and by his words. But there was relief for her, too, because if he was also foolish, then her foolishness bothered her less.
I thought you might be doing it on purpose, with your eyes. I thought it might be a part of your grace, to trap me with your eyes and read my mind.
It's not. It's nothing like that.
Most people won't look into my eyes. Most people fear them.
Yes. Most people don't look into my eyes for very long either. They're too strange.
She looked at his eyes then, leaned in and really studied them, as she hadn't had the courage to do before.
Your eyes are like lights. They don't seem quite natural.
He grinned.
My mother says when I opened my eyes on the day they settled, she almost dropped me, she was so startled.
What color were they before?
Gray, like most Leonid. And yours?
I've no idea. No one's ever told me. And I don't think there's anyone left I could ask.
Your eyes are beautiful,
he said, and she felt warm suddenly, warm in the sun that dappled through the treetops and rested on them in patches. And as they climbed back into their saddles and returned to the forest road, she didn't feel exactly comfortable with him, but she felt at least that she could look him in the face now and not fear she was surrendering her entire soul. The road led them around the outskirts of Mergen City and became wider and more traveled. Whenever Katza and Poe were seen, they were stared at. It would soon be known in the inns and houses around the city that the two Graceling fighters traveled south together along Mergen Road.
Are you sure you don't want to stop in on King Murgan and ask him your questions? It would be much faster, wouldn't it?
He made it quite clear after the robbery that I was no longer welcome at his court. He suspects I know what was stolen.
He's afraid of you.
Yes, and he's the type to do something foolish. If we arrived at his court, he'd probably mount an offensive, and we'd have to start hurting people. I'd prefer to avoid that, wouldn't you? If there's going to be an enormous mess, let it be at the court of the guilty king, not the king who's merely complicitous.
We'll go to the inn.
Yes, we'll go to the inn.
The forest road narrowed again and grew quieter once they left Murgan City behind. They stopped before night fell. They set up camp some distance from the road, in a small clearing with a mossy floor, a cover of thick branches, and a trickle of water that seemed to please the horses.
This is all a man needs. I could live here quite contented. What do you think, Katza?
Are you hungry for meat? I'll catch us something.
Even better. But it'll be dark in a few minutes. I wouldn't want you to get lost, even in the pitch dark.
Katza smiled then and stepped across the stream.
It'll only take me a few minutes. And I never get lost, even in the pitch dark.
You won't even take your bow? Are you planning to throttle a moose with your bare hands, then?
I've a knife in my boot,
she said, and then wondered, for a moment, if she could throttle a moose with her bare hands. It seemed possible. But right now she only sought a rabbit or a bird, and her knife would serve as weapon. She slipped between the gnarled trees and into the damp silence of the forest. It was simply a matter of listening, remaining quiet, and making herself invisible. When she came back minutes later with a great, fat, skinned rabbit, Poe had built a fire. The flames cast orange light on the horses and on himself.
It was the least I could do, and I see you've already skinned that hare. I'm beginning to think I won't have much responsibility as we travel through the forest together.
Does it bother you? You're welcome to do the hunting yourself. Perhaps I can stay by the fire and mend your socks, and scream if I hear any strange noises.
He smiled then.
Do you treat Gidden like this when the two of you travel? I imagine he finds it quite humiliating.
Poor Poe. You may content yourself with reading my mind, if you wish to feel superior.
He laughed.
I know you're teasing me, and you should know I'm not easily humiliated. You may hunt for my food and pound me every time we fight, and protect me when we're attacked if you like. I'll thank you for it.
But I'd never need to protect you if we were attacked, and I doubt you need me to do your hunting either.
True. But you're better than I am, Katza, and it doesn't humiliate me.
He fed a branch to the fire.
It humbles me, but it doesn't humiliate me.
She sat quietly as night closed in and watched the blood drip from the hunk of meat she held on a stick over the fire. She listened to it sizzle as it hit the flames. She tried to separate in her mind the idea of being humbled from the idea of being humiliated, and she understood what Poe meant. She wouldn't have thought to make the distinction. He was so clear with his thoughts, while hers were a constant storm that she could never make sense of and never control. She felt suddenly and sharply that Poe was smarter than she, world smarter, and that she was a brute in comparison, an unthinking and unfeeling brute.
Katza?
She looked up. The flames danced in the silver and gold of his eyes and caught the hoops in his ears. His face was all light.
Tell me, whose idea was the council?
It was mine.
And who has decided what missions the council carries out?
I have, ultimately.
Who has planned each mission?
I have, with Raffin and Dahl and the others.
He watched his meat cooking over the fire. He turned it and shook it absently, so the juice fell spitting into the flames. He raised his eyes to her again.
I don't see how you can compare us and find yourself lacking in intelligence, or unthinking, or unfeeling. I've had to spend my entire life hammering out the emotions of others and myself in my mind. If my mind is clearer, sometimes, than yours, it's because I've had more practice. That's the only difference between us.
He focused on his meat again. She watched him, listening.
I wish you would remember the council. I wish you would remember that when we met, you were rescuing my grandfather for no other reason than that you didn't believe he deserved to be kidnapped.
He leaned into the fire then and added another branch to the flames. They sat quietly, huddled in the light, surrounded by darkness. Chapter 17. In the morning, she woke before he did. She followed the dribble of water downstream until she found a place where it formed something larger than a puddle, but smaller than a pool. There she bathed as well as she could. She shivered, but she didn't mind the coldness of air and water. It woke her completely. When she tried to untie her hair and untangle it, she met with the usual frustration. She yanked and tugged, but her fingers could not find a way through the knots. She tied it back up. She dried herself as best she could and dressed. When she walked back into the clearing, he was awake, tying his bags together.
"Would you cut my hair off if I asked you?"
He looked up, eyebrows raised.
"You're not thinking of trying to disguise yourself."
"No, it's not that. It's just that it drives me mad, and I've never wanted it. And I'd be so much more comfortable if I could have it all off."
He examined the great knot gathered at the nape of her neck.
"It is rather wound together, like a bird's nest,"
he said, and at her glare, he laughed.
"If you truly wanted me to, I could cut it off. But I don't imagine you'd be particularly pleased with the result. Why don't you wait until we've reached the inn and have the innkeeper's wife do it, or one of the women in town?"
Katza sighed.
"Very well. I can live with it for one more day."
Poe disappeared down the path from which she'd come. She rolled up her blanket and began to carry their belongings to the horses. The road grew narrower as they continued south, and the forest grew thicker and darker. Poe led, despite Katz's protests. He insisted that when she set the pace, they always started out reasonably, but without fail, before long they were racing along at breakneck speed. He was taking it upon himself to protect Katz's horse from its rider.
"You say you're thinking of the horse,"
Katz said, when they stopped once to water the horses at a stream that crossed the road.
"But I think it's just that you can't keep up with me."
He laughed at that.
"You're trying to bait me, and it won't work."
"By the way, it occurs to me that we haven't practiced our fighting since I uncovered your deception and you agreed to stop lying to me."
"No, nor since you punched me in the jaw because you were angry with Randa."
She couldn't hold back her smile.
"Fine. You'll lead. But what about our practices? Don't you want to continue them?"
"Of course. Tonight, perhaps, if it's still light when we stop."
They rode quietly. Katz's mind wandered, and she found that when it wandered to anything to do with Poe, she would check herself and proceed carefully. If she must think of him, then it would be nothing significant. He would gain nothing from his intrusions into her mind as they rode along this quiet forest path. It occurred to her how susceptible he must be to intrusions. What if he were working out some complicated problem in his mind, concentrating very hard, and a great crowd of people approached? Or even a single person, who saw him and thought his eyes strange, or admired his rings, or wanted to buy his horse. Did he lose his concentration when other people filtered into his mind? How aggravating that would be. And then she wondered, could she get his attention without saying a word? If she needed his help or wanted to stop, could she call to him in his mind? It must be possible. If a person within his range wanted to communicate with him, he must know it. She looked at him, riding before her, his back straight and his arms steady, his white shirt sleeves rolled to the elbows, as always. She looked at the trees then, and at her horse's ears, and at the ground before her. She cleared her mind of anything to do with Poe.
"I'll hunt down a goose for dinner,"
she thought.
"The leaves on these trees are just beginning to change color. The weather is so lovely and cool."
And then, with all her might, she focused her attention on the back of Poe's head and screamed his name inside her mind. He pulled on his reins so hard that his horse screeched and staggered and almost sat down. Her own horse nearly collided with his, and he looked so startled and flabbergasted and irritated that she couldn't help it. She exploded with laughter.
What in the name of Leonid is wrong with you? Are you trying to scare me out of my wits? Is it not enough to ruin your own horse, but you must ruin mine as well?
She knew he was angry, but she couldn't stop laughing.
Forgive me, Poe. I was only trying to get your attention.
And I suppose it never occurs to you to start small. If I told you my roof needed rebuilding, you'd start by knocking down the house.
Oh, Poe, don't be angry.
She stifled the laugh that rose into her throat.
Truly, Poe, I had no idea it would startle you like that. I didn't think I could startle you. I didn't think your grace allowed it.
She coughed and forced her face into a mask of penitence, which wouldn't have fooled even the most incompetent of mind readers. But she hadn't meant it. Truly, she hadn't, and he must know that. And finally, his hard mouth softened, and a flicker of a smile played across his face.
Look at me,
he said, unnecessarily, for the smile had already trapped her.
Now, say my name, in your mind, as if you wanted to get my attention, quietly as you would if you were speaking it aloud.
She waited a moment, and then she thought it.
Poe?
He nodded.
That's all it takes.
Well, that was easy.
And you'll notice it caused no abuse to the horse.
Very funny. Can we practice while we're riding?
And for the rest of the day, she called to him on occasion, in her mind. Every time, he raised his hand to show that he'd heard, even when she whispered. So then she decided to stop calling to him, for it was clear that it worked, and she didn't want to badger him. He looked back at her then and nodded, and she knew that he had understood her. And she rode behind him with her eyes wide and tried to make some sense of their having had an entire conversation of sorts without saying a word. They made camp beside a pond, surrounded by great Sundaran trees. As they unhooked their bags from the horses, Katsu was sure she saw a goose through the reeds, waddling around on the opposite shore. Poe squinted.
It does appear to be a goose, and I wouldn't mind a drumstick for dinner.
So Katsu set out, approaching the creature quietly. It didn't notice her. She decided to walk right up to it and break its neck, as the kitchen women did in the chicken houses of the castle. But as she snuck forward, the goose heard her and began to squawk and run for the water. She ran after the bird, and it spread its massive wings and took to the air. She leaped and wrapped her arms around its middle. She brought it down straight into the pond, surprised by its size. And now she was wrestling in the water with an enormous, flapping, biting, splashing, kicking goose, but only for a moment, for her hands were around its neck, and its neck was snapped before it could close its sharp beak around any part of her body. She turned to the shore then, and was surprised to find Poe standing there, gaping. She stood in the pond, the water streaming from her hair and clothing, and held the huge bird up by the neck for him to see.
I got it.
He stared at her for a moment, his chest rising and falling, for he had run, apparently, at the sight of the underwater struggle. He rubbed his temples.
Katsu, what in Leonid are you doing?
What do you mean? I've caught us a goose.
Why didn't you use your knife? You're standing in the pond. You're soaked through.
It's only water. It was time I washed my clothing anyway.
Katsu.
I wanted to see if I could do it. What if I'm ever traveling without weapons and I need to eat? It's good to know how to catch a goose without weapons.
You could have stood at our camp and shot it across the pond if you wanted. I've seen your aim.
But now I know I can do this.
He shook his head and held out a hand.
Come out of there before you catch a chill, and give me that. I'll pluck it while you change into dry clothing.
I never catch a chill,
she said as she waded to shore. He laughed then.
Oh, Katsu, I'm sure you don't.
He took the goose from her hands.
Do you still have a fight in you? We can practice while your goose is cooking.
Fighting him was different, now that she knew his true advantages. It was a waste of her energy, she realized, to fake a blow. She could have no mental advantage over him. No amount of cleverness would serve her. Her only advantages were her speed and her ferocity. And now that she knew this, it became easy enough to adjust her strategy. She didn't waste time being creative. She only pummeled him as fast and as hard as she could. He might know where she aimed her next blow, but after a barrage of hits, he simply couldn't keep up with her anymore. He couldn't move fast enough to block her. They struggled and wrestled as the light faded and the night moved in. Over and over again he surrendered and heaved himself back up to his feet, laughing and moaning.
This is good practice for me, but I can't see what you have to gain from it, other than the satisfaction of beating me to a pulp.
We'll have to come up with some new drills, something to challenge both of our graces.
Keep fighting me once the sky is dark. You'll find us more evenly matched then.
It was true. The night sky closed in around them, a black sky with no moon and no stars. Eventually, Katsu could no longer see, could only make out his vaguest outline. Her blows, as she threw them, were approximate. He knew she couldn't see, and moved in ways that would confuse her. His defense became stronger, and his own strikes hit her squarely. She stopped him.
It's that exact? Your sense of my hands and feet?
Hands and feet, fingers and toes. You're so physical, Katsa. You've so much physical energy. I sense it constantly. Even your emotions seem physical sometimes.
She squinted at him and considered.
Could you fight a person blindfolded?
I never have. I could never have tried it, of course, without arousing suspicion. But yes, I could, though it would be easier on flat ground. My sense of the forest floor is too inconsistent.
She stared at him, a black shape against a blacker sky.
Wonderful. It's wonderful. I envy you. We must fight more often at night.
He laughed.
I won't complain. It'd be nice to be on the offensive every once in a while.
They fought just a bit longer, until they both tripped over a fallen branch and Po landed on his back, half submerged in the pond. He came up spluttering.
I think we've done enough barreling around in the dark. Shall we check on your goose?
The goose sizzled over the fire. Katsa poked at it with her knife, and the meat fell away from the bone.
It's perfect. I'll cut you your drumstick.
She glanced up at him, and in that moment he pulled his wet shirt over his head. She forced her mind blank. Blank as a new sheet of paper, blank as a starless sky. He came to the fire and crouched before it. He rubbed the water from his bare arms and flicked it into the flames. She stared at the goose and sliced his drumstick carefully and thought of the blankest expression on the blankest face she could possibly imagine. It was a chilly evening. She thought about that. The goose would be delicious. They must eat as much of it as possible. They must not waste it. She thought about that.
I hope you're hungry. I don't want this goose to go to waste.
I'm ravenous.
He was going to sit there shirtless, apparently, until the fire dried him. A mark on his arm caught her eye, and she took a breath and imagined a blank book full of page after empty page. But then a similar mark on his other arm drew her attention, and her curiosity got the better of her. She couldn't help herself. She squinted at his arms. And it was all right. This was acceptable. For there was nothing wrong with being curious about the marks that seemed to be painted onto his skin. Dark, thick bands, like a ribbon wrapped around each arm, in the place where the muscles of his shoulder ended and the muscles of his arm began. The bands, one circling each arm, were decorated with intricate designs that she thought might be a number of different colors. It was hard to tell in the firelight.
It's a Leonid ornamentation, like the rings in my ears.
But what is it? Is it paint?
It's a kind of dye.
And it doesn't wash away?
Not for many years.
He reached into one of his bags and pulled out a dry shirt. He slipped it down over his head, and Katsa thought of a great blank field of snow and breathed a small sigh of relief. She handed him his drumstick.
The Leonid people are fond of decoration.
Do the women wear the markings?
No, Only the men.
Do the people...
Yes.
But no one ever sees it. Lenid clothing doesn't show a man's upper arms, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's a decoration hardly anyone sees.
She caught a smile in his eyes that flashed at her in the light.
What? What are you grinning about?
It's meant to be attractive to my wife.
Katza nearly dropped her knife into the fire.
You have a wife?
Great seas, no. Honestly, Katza, don't you think I would have mentioned her?
He was laughing now, and she snorted.
I never know what you'll choose to mention about yourself, Poe.
It's meant for the eyes of the wife I'm supposed to have.
Whom will you marry?
He shrugged.
I hadn't pictured myself marrying anyone.
She moved to his side of the fire and sliced the other drumstick for herself. She went back and sat down.
Aren't you concerned about your castle and your land? About producing heirs?
He shrugged again.
Not enough to attach me to a person I don't wish to be attached to. I'm content enough on my own.
Katza was surprised.
I had thought of you as more of a social creature when you're in your own land.
When I'm in Lenid, I do a decent job of folding myself into normal society, when I must. But it's an act, Katza. It's always an act. It's a strain to hide my grace, especially from my family. When I'm in my father's city, there's a part of me that's simply waiting until I can travel again, or return to my own castle, where I'm left alone.
This she could understand perfectly.
I suppose if you married, it could only be to a woman trustworthy enough to know the truth of your grace.
He barked out a short laugh.
Yes, the woman I married would have to meet a number of rather impossible requirements.
He threw the bone from his drumstick into the fire and cut another piece of meat from the goose. He blew on the meat to cool it.
And what of you, Katza? You've broken Gideon's heart with your departure, haven't you?
His very name filled her with impatience.
Gideon. And can you really not see why I wouldn't wish to marry him?
I can see a thousand reasons why you wouldn't wish to marry him. But I don't know which is your reason.
Even if I wished to marry, I wouldn't marry Gideon. But I won't marry, not anyone. I'm surprised you hadn't heard that rumor. You were at Randa's court long enough.
Oh, I heard it. But I also heard you were some kind of feckless thug and that Randa had you under his thumb, neither of which turned out to be true.
She smiled then and threw her own bone into the fire. One of the horses whickered. Some small creature slipped into the pond, the water closing around it with a gulp. She suddenly felt warm and content and full of good food.
Raffin and I talked once about marrying. For he's not wild about the idea of marrying some noble woman who thinks only of being rich or being queen. And, of course, he must marry someone. He has no choice in the matter. And to marry me would be an easy solution. We get along. I wouldn't try to keep him from his experiments. He wouldn't expect me to entertain his guests. He wouldn't keep me from the council.
She thought of Raffin bending over his books and his flasks. He was probably working on some experiment right now, with Ban at his side. By the time she returned to court, perhaps he would be married to some lady or another. He married, and she not there for him to come to and talk of it. She not there to tell him her thoughts, if he wished to hear them, as he always did.
In the end, it was out of the question. We laughed about it, for I couldn't even begin to consider it seriously. I wouldn't ever consent to be queen. And Raffin will require children, which I'd also never consent to. And I won't be so tied to another person, not even Raffin.
She squinted into the fire and sighed over her cousin whose responsibilities were so heavy.
I hope he'll fall in love with some woman who'll make a happy queen and mother. That would be the best thing for him. Some woman who wants a whole roost of children.
Poe tilted his head at her.
Do you dislike children?
I've never disliked the children I've met. I've just never wanted them. I haven't wanted to mother them. I can't explain it.
She remembered Gideon then, who had assured her that this would change, as if he knew her heart, as if he had the slightest understanding of her heart. She threw another bone into the fire and hacked another piece of meat from the goose. She felt Poe's eyes and looked up at him, scowling.
Why are you glaring at me, when for all I can tell, you're not angry with me?
She smiled.
I was only thinking Gideon would have found me a very vexing wife. I wonder if he would have understood when I planted a patch of seabane in the gardens. Or perhaps he would have thought me charmingly domestic.
Poe looked puzzled.
What's seabane?
I don't know if you have another name for it in Leenid. It's a small, purple flower. A woman who eats its leaves will not bear a child.
They wrapped themselves in their blankets and lay before the dying fire. Poe yawned a great, deep yawn, but Katza wasn't tired. A question occurred to her, but she didn't want to wake him if he was falling asleep.
What is it, Katza? I'm awake.
She didn't know if she would ever get used to that.
I was wondering whether I could wake you by calling to you inside your mind when you're sleeping.
I don't know. I don't sense things while I'm sleeping, but if I'm in danger or if someone approaches, I always wake. You may try it.
He yawned again.
If you must.
I'll try it another night, when you're less tired.
Aren't you ever tired, Katza?
I'm sure I am,
she said, though she couldn't bring a specific example to mind.
Do you know the story of King Lek of Mansi?
I didn't know there was a story.
There is. A story from ages ago, and you should know it if we're to travel to his kingdom. I'll tell it to you, and perhaps you'll feel more tired.
He rolled onto his back. She lay on her side and watched the line of his profile in the light of the dying fire.
The last king and queen of Mansi were kind people. Not particularly great state minds, but they had good advisors, and they were kinder to their people than most today could even imagine for a king and queen. But they were childless. It wasn't a good thing, Katza, as it would be for you. They wanted a child desperately, so that they might have an heir, but also just because they wanted one, as I suppose most people do. And then one day, a boy came to their court. A handsome boy of about 13 years, clever-looking, with a patch over one eye, for he'd lost an eye when he was younger. He didn't say where he came from, or who his parents were, or what had happened to his eye. He only came to court begging and telling stories in return for food and money. The servants took him in, for he told such wonderful stories, wild stories about a place beyond the Seven Kingdoms, where monsters came out of the sea and air, and armies burst out of holes in the mountains, and the people are different from anyone we've ever known. Eventually, the king and queen learned of him, and he was brought before them to tell his stories. The boy charmed them completely, charmed them from the first day. They pitied him for his poverty and loneliness and his missing eye. They began to bring him into their presence for meals, or ask for him when they'd returned from long journeys, or call him to their rooms in the evenings. They treated him like a noble boy. He was educated and taught to fight and ride. They treated him almost as if he were their own son. And when the boy was 16 and the king and queen still didn't have a child of their own, the king did something extraordinary. He named the boy his heir.
Even though they knew nothing of his past?
Even though they knew nothing of his past. And this is where the story truly becomes interesting, Katza. For not a week after the king had named the boy his heir, the king and queen died of a sudden sickness, and their two closest advisors fell into despair and threw themselves into the river. Or so the story goes. I don't know that there were any witnesses.
Katza propped herself on her elbow and stared at him.
Do you think that's strange? I've always thought it strange. But the Mansian people never questioned it, and all in my family who've met Lek tell me I'm foolish to wonder. They say Lek is utterly charming, even his eye patch is charming. They say he grieved for the king and queen terribly and couldn't possibly have had anything to do with their deaths.
I've never known this story. I didn't even know Lek was missing an eye. Have you met him?
I haven't, but I've always had a feeling I wouldn't take to him as others have, despite his great reputation for kindness to the small and the powerless.
He yawned and turned onto his side.
Well, and I suppose we'll both learn soon enough whether we take to him, if things go as I expect. Good night to you, Katza. We may reach the inn tomorrow.
Katza closed her eyes and listened to his breath grow steady and even. She considered the tale he'd told. It was hard to reconcile King Lek's pleasant reputation with this story. Still, perhaps he was innocent. Perhaps there was some logical explanation. She wondered what reception they would receive at the inn, and whether they'd be lucky enough to cross paths with someone who held the information they sought. She listened to the sounds of the pond and the breeze in the grasses. When she thought Poe had fallen asleep, she said his name aloud once, quietly. He didn't stir. She thought his name once, quietly, like a whisper in her mind. Again, he didn't stir, and his breathing didn't change. He was asleep. Katza exhaled slowly. She was the greatest fool in all the Seven Kingdoms. Why, when she fought with him almost every day, when she knew every part of his body, why, when she'd sat on his stomach and wrestled with him on the ground and could probably identify his armhold faster than any wife would recognize the embrace of her own husband, had the sight of his arms and his shoulders so embarrassed her? She had seen 1,000 shirtless men before, in the practice rooms, or when traveling with Gidden and all. Raffin practically undressed in front of her, they were so used to each other. It was like his eyes. Unless they were fighting, Poe's body had the same effect on her as his eyes. His breathing changed, and she froze her thoughts. She listened as his breathing settled back into a rhythm. It was not going to be simple with Poe. Nothing with Poe was going to be simple. But he was her friend, and so she would travel with him. She would help him uncover the kidnapper of his grandfather. And by all means, she would take care not to tumble him into any more ponds. And now she must sleep. She turned her back to him and willed her mind to darkness.
Chapter 18. The inn was a great tall building made of solid lumber. The farther south one rode into Sunder, the heavier and thicker the wood of the trees, and the stronger and more imposing the houses and inns. Katza had not spent much time in central Sunder. Her uncle had sent her there 2 or 3 times, perhaps. But the wild forests and simple, sturdy little towns, too far from the borders to be involved in the nonsense of the kings, had always pleased Katza. The walls of the inn felt like castle walls, but darker and warmer. They sat at a table, in a room full of men sitting at tables, heavy, dark tables built from the same wood as the walls. It was the time of day when men of the town and travelers alike poured into the inn's great eating room and sat down to talk and laugh over a cup of something strong to drink. The room had recovered from the hush that afflicted it when Poe and Katza first walked through the door. The men were noisy now and jovial, and if they did peek at the Graceling royalty over their cups and around their chairs, well, at least they didn't stare outright. Poe sat back in his chair. His eyes flicked lazily around the room. He drank from his cup of cider, and his finger traced the wet ring it left on the table. He leaned his elbow on the table and propped his head in his hand. He yawned. He looked, Katza thought, as if he only needed a lullaby and he would nod off to sleep. It was a good act. His eyes flashed at her then, and with them a glimmer of a smile.
I don't think we'll stay long at this inn. There are men in this room who've already taken an interest in us.
Poe had informed the innkeeper that they would offer money for any information about the kidnapping of Grandfather Teelif. Men, particularly Sunderin men, if men are like their king, would do a great deal for money. They would change allegiances. They would tell truths they had promised not to reveal. They would also make up stories, but it didn't matter, for Poe could tell as much from a lie as he could from the truth. Katza sipped from her cup and looked out into the sea of men. The finery of the merchants stood out among the muted browns and oranges of the people of the town. Katza was the only woman in the room, save a harried serving girl, the innkeeper's daughter, who ran among the tables with a tray full of cups and pitchers. She was small in stature, dark, and pretty, and a bit younger than Katza. She caught no one's eye as she worked and didn't smile, except to the occasional townsman old enough to be her father. She had brought Katza and Poe their drinks silently, with only a quick, shy glance at Poe. Most of the men in the room showed her the proper respect, but Katza didn't much like the smiles on the faces of the merchants whose table she served at the moment.
How old is that girl, do you think? Do you think she's married?
Poe watched the table of merchants and sipped from his drink.
16 or 17, I'd guess. She's not married.
How do you know?
He paused.
I don't. It was a guess.
It didn't sound like a guess.
He drank from his cup. His face was impassive. It hadn't been a guess. This she knew. And it occurred to her suddenly how he could know such a thing with such certainty. She took a moment to nurse her irritation on behalf of every girl who'd ever admired Poe and thought her feelings private.
You're impossible. You're no better than those merchants. And besides, just because she has her eyes on you doesn't mean...
And that's not fair. I can't help what I know. My error was in revealing it to you. I'm not used to traveling with someone who knows my grace. I spoke before thinking how unfair it would be to the girl.
She rolled her eyes.
Spare me your confessions. If she's unmarried, I don't understand why her father sends her out to serve these men. I'm not certain she's safe among them.
Her father stands at the bar most of the time. No one would dare harm her.
But he's not there always. He's not there now. And just because they don't assault her doesn't mean they respect her.
Or that they would not seek her out later. The girl circled the table of merchants, pouring cider into each cup. When one of the men reached for her arm, she recoiled. The merchants burst into laughter. The man reached out to her then and drew back, reached out and drew back, taunting her. His friends laughed harder. And then the man at the girl's other side grabbed her wrist and held on, and there was a great whoop from the men. She tried to pull away, but the laughing man wouldn't let go. Red with shame, she looked into none of their faces, only pulled at her arm. She was too much like a dumb, confused rabbit caught in a trap. And suddenly Katza was standing, and Poe was standing too, and he had Katza by the arm. For an instant, Katza appreciated the strange symmetry, except that unlike the serving girl, she could break from Poe's grip, and unlike the merchant, Poe had good reason to hold her arm.